The Late Debate with Katie Hannan on RTE Radio 1.
Tittle tattle, minister says allegation he leaked from cabinet is untrue. Cautious or careless how the HSE's panic buying cost us hundreds of millions. Fight or flight, Michael O'Leary puts it up to the government. And why is President Michael D. Higgins not going to meet the Queen? We'll have all that and more on tonight's Late Debate. And joining us to discuss all of that, we have Nessa Hourigan, Green Party TD for Dublin Central, Verona Murphy, Independent TD for Wexford, Eoghan O'Riordan, Labour TD for Dublin Bay North, and Elaine Loughlin, Deputy Political Editor with the Irish Examiner. And we want to hear from you, of course, so you can text us on 51551, email us on latedebate@rte.ie, or you can tweet to @latedebate_RTE. Well, between the warring dynasties, talk of breaches of trust and historical bonds being broken, you could be forgiven for thinking that the action in the Dáil last night was part of RTÉ's new drama season. However, it was all an in-night's work for the deputies of Dáil Éireann. How are we today, the morning after, the evening after the night before? Nessa, as someone who didn't really want to see the Green Party go into this government and expressed a lot of reservations publicly, did last night bring back some of those worries to you?
I mean, look, it's been a tumultuous summer, at the time of the when the Catherine Zappone issue began, and particularly when the Marion Party, that story came out, I was very clear that I was unhappy. I think the days of those kind of jobs being given out should be over. It should always be in a process. I kind of feel like my objection to the government's going to follow me around for the next 5 years. Just to say, look, for me, there is an issue around here, around this issue, around governance and trust in the government. I have to be honest and say that I never really understood why that would all be laid at Simon Coveney's door. You know, even in its earliest inception, this involved the Tánaiste and Pascal Donoghue, and it was signed off by Cabinet. So for me, of all, there have been very difficult votes over the last year. I have to say, I think that there's a larger issue here around freedom of information, around process, around, I do think there's an issue around cronyism.
The cronyism wasn't all at Simon Coveney's door? There was cronyism involved with Pascal Donoghue and Leo Varadkar as well.
I think the vote of no confidence, or confidence, however way you look at it, was not a good mechanism for working that through. And actually, in a way, a vote of confidence often draws a line under those issues. And there are bigger issues here that I hope we don't let go. I hope that issue around freedom of information and how we use phones, which I think there's genuine confusion around, I hope that doesn't get laid to rest.
Well, I mean, to be fair to Sinn Féin, they did, obviously, it was their motion of no confidence that then became the government motion of confidence. But they did then use their private members' bill, our time last night, to introduce that motion on FOI, on freedom of information.
See, I think the problem with FOI is, and the government has taken up a review of FOI, and that's fine, but we don't enforce FOI now. And I think that there's a real problem around communicating what FOI actually requires of, public servants. I think we should start there. Before we start doing reviews and new legislation, let's enforce the legislation that we have.
Absolutely. And I do think we just touched on this last night. Eoghan, this idea that when there's questions raised about why were those texts only turning up now? Why didn't you say you had these texts earlier? Why is this email released by one department and yet the recipient department didn't release it when the same records were requested? And when the answer to that is, we're going to review the FOI Act. I mean, that's putting out the idea that there's something wrong with the legislation, not with the lack of compliance with legislation.
Yeah, I would agree. I felt it was kind of an ugly atmosphere in the chamber yesterday. I have to admit, I didn't enjoy it at all. You come back into Leinster House from your summer break and you're reminded of the privilege it is to serve in the Dáil, and you get sucked into a Sinn Féin Fine Gael catfight, which both of them actually, they won't pretend that they enjoy, but they do. Fine Gael produced a very glossy video over the weekend about how great Simon Coveney was. It was like a trailer to a movie. And then you have Sinn Féin doing,
voiced by Neil Richmond, doing voiceover.
Indeed, yeah. I, you know, it's a, maybe it's a, it's a,
it's a career move for him. If politics doesn't work out for him, but I'm quite sure it will. And then Sinn Féin do what Sinn Féin do. And it's mutually beneficial for both parties, because what they're trying to do is to make Irish politics just about the two of them. And they're both trading on a negative. Fine Gael are trading on fear of Sinn Féin, and Sinn Féin are trading on anger.
And so you're actually saying Fine Gael enjoyed the spectacle of
I think they utilised it for their own political end. And what happened, I found, some of the best contributions actually came from the Green Party in the debate, because they spoke to issues. Fianna Fáil seem to be having discussions about their own party. Fine Gael have been playing, to my mind, a political game. Now, I don't say that every minister has. There are many ministers in the government that I have a lot of time for. Simon Harris would be one, Pascal Donoghue would be another, people who are trying to achieve things. Simon Coveney would be another, actually. But I'm getting tired of this political game between Fine Gael and Sinn Féin, which is, as I say, mutually beneficial when there are others who are trying to promote policies. I mean, late last night, I think the Irish public see that dominating, and they think that's what politics is about. But, NASA will know, and Fiona will know, that there's so much that happens outside of the glare of a row. Late nights or questions to the Varadkar, which I had last night, topical issues that people here would know all about. People are still in the chamber up until half an hour ago. But that's not what Fine Gael and Sinn Féin want. Fine Gael are electioneering. Sinn Féin are doing similar. And
well, to be fair to Fine Gael, they had to defend their man.
Yeah, but there's this fits into the narrative. I'll give you an example. I had to question the Taoiseach a number of months ago on leaders' questions. Alan Kelly wasn't available, and I stood in, and I did a bit of research on his Twitter activity. He had mentioned Sinn Féin 12 times over the previous 4 months, and not mentioned youth unemployment once. And youth unemployment comes under his remit. So it's quite clear for me, looking at his public utterances, the stuff that he talks about, the way that his mannerisms and the Dáil, that he's playing into this game of making Irish politics about this choice, that you either vote for Sinn Féin or you vote for Fine Gael. And I'm quite sure he's quite happy for Sinn Féin to be at 30-odd% in the polls, as long as everybody else is gobbled up. And what I would say to people listening is that there are people outside of those two blocks who are actually trying to promote policies to benefit people's lives.
Verona, you supported the government. Fine Gael last night.
No, I supported Simon Coveney.
I was just going to ask you that. Was that a vote for government or for
Simon
the man?
Coveney? I mean, look, he's a fine politician. He has a huge career history. I've been in his shoes, not with the vote of no confidence, but on the basis of similar. I have to say, the problem I have with all this is, no matter what side of the table we're on, the moral high ground is seldom grazed. And I think we're back to where we were. I didn't agree with what happened with Phil Hogan. I didn't agree with what happened with Barry Cowan. And I think we have seen a whole new level of wokeness, to the point of where the pendulum is now swinging too far. And I agree with Nessa, and I agree with what Aidan is saying. And I think we've only just come out of a vote of no confidence. That particularly annoyed me more because it wasn't on a substantive issue. So to go to the extreme of taking a vote of no confidence or instituting a vote of no confidence, and today go from that controversy straight back into another one. And it's either orchestrated. It could very easily, this new controversy can very easily be shut down. If that's what Fine Gael want, they can shut it down. And I mean, it's an internal Fine Gael squabble, if you like, or whatever has happened, but they can shut it down very simply. And I think it's up to the Taoiseach to come out and clarify that. Come out and clarify this new controversy. Do not allow us as politicians to have to deal with media intrusion of topics.
What's he going to say, though? He's already said.
Well, everybody in the house knows what the story is. It's well known. It's 1 minute.
Can I just be clear?
Yeah.
Everybody in the house doesn't know what the story is. Everybody has heard a story.
One TD didn't come to me. He didn't do what they say he did, which was entrap another minister, and that minister hasn't been questioned by me.
Can I agree for a second just on the Taoiseach around
this? And can we just be careful about this? Because we're talking about an allegation that has been denied.
He had a fantastic opportunity on the radio, I think it was Morning Ireland or Monday morning, to actually de-escalate the whole thing, to make a, you know, a genuine apology for what had happened, to take responsibility for it. But what he did was, oh, by the way, the Taoiseach had that memo 24 hours before it went to Cabinet. So again, it's a sort of game playing. Where is the leadership? Where is the sense of this is a mess of my party's making and I'm taking absolute responsibility for it and I'm sorry that we're not talking about other stuff.
Okay,
but what does
okay.
he do? But by the way, the Taoiseach had it 24 hours beforehand. You know what I mean?
Okay.
That is not, that's game playing,
and if
that's
I
politicking.
Could also be clear in relation to actually when you say supporting, I supported Simon Coveney, but if there were and if there is a substantive motion of no confidence on a substantive issue, I should say, I will very much be considering how I will vote. And I think everybody of the a number of independents who voted.
But you would personally, because I think I recall you saying after your difficulties with Fine Gael at that time that Simon Coveney was the only member that contacted
but
in the wake of that.
Yeah, that's true. All I got was a phone call to say he was thinking of me and was I all right? And it was that was it. But I mean, that's not the reality of why I voted confidence. I have confidence in the position he has held for 20 years. I am not someone who is looking for a scalp or who believes that a career that is as extensive as Simon Coveney's should fall on a sword in this regard.
Okay.
And I think there's, as Aidan said, there isn't one person in my constituency that complained about this. We have too many issues in relation
true,
to carers,
yeah,
people
true.
Trying to get home from hospital, can't get carers, people dying of cancer, can't get palliative care. They're the real issues mm-hmm. that people want to hear about. And it's very distracting and frustrating.
You can't divorce it, though, from, and it was what you said, actually, Nessa, is that idea of cronyism and how corrosive that idea is in terms of people's confidence and trust and faith in governance generally.
I agree with that. And I have to say, I've talked a bit this year about, you know, because we're in the pandemic and, you know, people's faith in the institutions of the state is really, really important. But on the other hand, you can't also divorce it from the media side of this and I hate to say it, but it seemed like because of the drip of information, it was great source for journalists. They had a new story every single day. But the reality is, and look, I'm not somebody who'd kind of go to bat for the government if it wasn't the case, but I actually didn't really get that many emails about it. It didn't seem to me that the public was particularly exercised about it.
It was the Beltway one, yeah.
It was a bubble issue. I think it's very important in Leinster House and within like the body politic, but whether it's meaningful for people's lives who are, you know, worrying about POF and worrying about carers, I don't know.
Okay, Elaine, you were trying to get in there.
Well, firstly, I just have to maybe disagree slightly with NASA there, because while the public might not have been exercised about the ins and outs about who did what and who sent what texts and who, you know, published what texts at what time, they were angry with this idea that, you know, jobs for the boys, or in this case, a woman. And I think that definitely was something that exercised the public. It may not have led them to write to their local TD or minister about, but it certainly was something that was being spoken about in among the general population. But I have to go back to Aon as well, because, you know, he sounded very mature there now and being disappointed with how things played out when we got back to the
Because he'd never do
week.
Anything like that, Elaine. We know that.
Well,
I can't wait to the end of the sentence. Go on.
I think it's just a bit high and mighty for himself and his and both his party to claim that they perhaps never have used what is an amphitheatre for a performance. The Dáil is a theatre. Politicians use it to put on a performance. We all know this. You know, there's to-ing and fro-ing between opposition and government, and that's how it should be. And to be honest, I thought it was absolutely fantastic. It's been the first time, really, since this government was set up, that Mary Lou was able to eyeball both the Taoiseach and the Tánaiste in those exchanges, and that really makes a difference. And you saw that. Now, it did get tense, and there were some choice words during some of those exchanges, but isn't that what it should be? You know, instead of a situation where the Taoiseach couldn't even see who he was speaking to in some instances in the convention centre.
I'm sure actually you would all agree it is a relief to get back into Leinster House for those debates, for any debate, because the convention centre...
I'm not suggesting there shouldn't be theatre, and of course we all make impassioned speeches, but I'm just noticing a trend of behaviour between two of these major, I'd like to present themselves, but power blocks of Irish politics, and how they're interacting with each other and how it's mutually beneficial. And some of the language that was used during the debate, and mutterings and coarse language, wasn't befitting the chamber, I'll be honest about it. And some of the personalised attack that's been trying to erode the humanity of certain politicians.
You mean the exclamations of how it should be? Bull excrement.
Yeah, and I saw what happened to Owen Murphy, and I didn't think a lot of that was pretty edifying. And I think we have to watch this space, because politics should be something that we encourage people to go into.
Okay.
And we have to watch it.
Okay, let's just touch on, before we leave this, on the thing that everyone was talking about today, I think. We know what Matt Carthy said on the record of the Dáil under Dáil privilege yesterday evening. He was asked about that on the News at One today, asked if what effort he had made to verify that allegation before he stated it publicly.
You say it's the talk. Do you have evidence to back up that claim?
I only know what is general knowledge. I know that the sting operation was conducted by a junior minister. I'm told, according to media reports, that minister was challenged by the Fine Gael leader, Leo Varadkar. So I think if anybody has evidence, then it is Fine Gael, and they should share it.
But before you made your claim last night, because it is you who put the minister's name into the public domain, did you take any steps to check out the veracity of that?
I'm aware of what I said and the exact wording of what I said, and I'm aware that that is general knowledge and generally accepted knowledge.
General knowledge, but do you have evidence to back up that claim?
No, because I didn't carry out the sting operation. Fine Gael did.
And that was, of course, Justin McCarthy questioning Matt Carthy there. And Simon Harris then put on record on the Dáil today that allegation was untrue and said that it was an abuse of Dáil privilege. And he was asked about this at lunchtime at an event in Grange Gorman in TU.
I think what happened yesterday was an extraordinary misuse of Dáil privilege, and if you didn't already think that, I think as any fair-minded person would, I'd invite you to just listen to Deputy Carthy on RT Radio 1 in recent moments. Quite extraordinary that somebody would come into the Dáil and misuse Dáil privilege, abuse Dáil privilege. Not the first time, sadly, that this has been done by the Sinn Féin party, and the Taoiseach made this very clear. Taoiseach also made the point that he'd like the Committee on Procedures and Privileges to look into that matter as well in relation to the assertions made by Deputy Carthy. But it's a misuse of Dáil privilege. It was completely untrue.
Completely untrue, says Simon Harris. Elaine, is this the end of that one?
Well, I think for Fine Gael, they'll be hoping it will be. We did as well. I think you didn't have a clip of it there, but we had Minister of State Colin Brophy going on radio this morning suggesting that it may not have even been leaked from Cabinet, that a number of other individuals also get memos ahead of Cabinet. So again, trying to broaden the circle of who it may be. I also was briefed by a senior member of government today trying to maybe put forward the theory that even if it was a minister who leaked the initial information, it may not have been leaked at Cabinet. And of course, that would be significant. This person stated that Fine Gael ministers were told of Catherine Zappone's appointment at the pre-Cabinet meeting of Fine Gael ministers. And the theory put forward was that the text to a journalist was sent between that meeting and Cabinet. So technically it wasn't a Cabinet leak. So when you're getting into that level of detail, right, you know you're kind of losing.
A lot of eye rolling going on in this studio, Elaine, that you can't see where you are right now.
Well, I can imagine.
Right. We'll move on from that. Actually, but before we leave this idea of allegations being made and Nessa, did your party discuss those comments made by Brian Leddon?
No, we didn't.
Not at all.
Sorry,
just to explain in case people don't know, you had your thinking, yes, and everyone assumed that this controversy, which was, we're told, a huge issue for a lot of your members and by and Catherine Martin indeed. And this, we're talking about the comments on a WhatsApp group about that Brian Leddon was a member of and it referred in unsavoury terms, I think you could say, to Councillor Eliza O'Donovan.
So just let me be clear. There was a general discussion about misogyny on the Tuesday morning. I asked for that issue to be discussed in detail, and I was told we can't discuss it because it's now a legal issue. I'm very unhappy with that answer because my understanding is that actually the executive committee wasn't in a position to sanction Deputy Leddin because they were told that it's a matter for the parliamentary party, which would be fairly standard within the constitution of a political party. But then the parliamentary party is being told that we can't discuss it because it's a legal issue. Now, that's a particular catch-22 that I'm unhappy with. Mm-hmm. I know that at the end of the thinking, I was actually chairing a session of budgetary oversight, so I couldn't attend, that a number of our councillors brought it up with the parliamentary party. I don't believe Deputy Leddin was present for that either, so there was a couple of us missing. But to me, we haven't ever really discussed it, and now we're in a kind of a place where it's a legal issue, apparently, and I can't raise it anymore. So I'm unhappy with that outcome, I'm kind of considering how we can progress it, because I have heard from many women in the party, but many women outside the party, that, you know, it's not good enough, and they're not happy to let it lie like that.
What kind of a sanction would do you think would be appropriate?
Well, I mean, at the very least, like, Deputy Leddin is the chair of our parliamentary party. So, you know, the week after that story came out, we were sitting in a parliamentary party where the chair, you know, is the part and chairing parts of the thinking, where I then have to, you know, ask that a discussion happen around Deputy Leddin's issue. It's very uncomfortable. So I think, you know, when I was whip and I did something that I knew by voting against the government that I knew the parliamentary party probably wouldn't support, I actually resigned as whip an hour before I did that. So I think perhaps taking a break as being chair of the parliamentary party would be advisable. I think
you think he should resign as chair of the party?
I think that would be something to consider, at least for some time, until we do some work around that issue.
No, he has, you know, we should say, apologised. And we should say as well that the remarks were not his remarks. The the saying, if we want to put it that way, was that he remained silent while these remarks were made.
I mean, look, I suppose I don't want to go through the whole issue again. I know that Councillor Elisa O'Donovan doesn't accept his apology, and it's not for me to accept his apology. And there was another lady involved who I believe also didn't receive an apology. I really, you know, don't particularly want to go through the specifics of it, but I do know that there's issues around misogyny in many political parties. And when something like this happens, it's actually a chance. It's actually an opportunity to, you know, talk these things through and make sure that you're getting it right. I'm not sure we are.
Is this more wokedom for you, Verona?
No, I'll tell you what it is. It's setting the bar. I mean, it's how do you correlate all of these faux pas from politicians and deal with them? Should we not call for Brian's head? Should we not do the same thing? Brian's a lovely gentleman. I've sat beside him in the convention centre now for a year. I actually didn't read the comments until I saw the tweet yesterday, and I read what Miss O'Donovan had to say. It was very heart-tugging on the basis that she was quite upset. Now, we're all human. So the reality is, though, how do we continuously look for sanctions? How do we continuously not be able to move on, you know, if there isn't a sanction? It's a black mark now forever against Brian Leddin. Yours is a black mark forever because you resigned the whip, you voted against the government. These are issues that are distracting from the day to day. But clearly, I just need to finish this.
I'm just trying to establish what important. You're saying, Verona.
What I'm saying is, as a party, they should already know what the sanction is for that behaviour. It shouldn't need
just to be clear, Verona, I'm actually less interested in the sanction. I know you're the whole thing.
I understand and I agree with you on that.
I'm actually not that pushed about
resigning. But that should come anyway.
Opportunity is, when these things happen, because we know it's rife in Irish society, the opportunity is to plot a course away from
Nessa,
that.
You know, Joe O'Brien has stood up in the Dáil and called me a racist a number of times. I wouldn't consider standing up and calling Brian Leddin a misogynist based on what has happened. he didn't make the comments. There has to be a way to deal with it, that it doesn't take over the media, that it doesn't take over life for the real important issues. You should have a sanction. There should be something in place. You can't expect it of everybody else if you're not going to do it yourself.
OK, we'll move on. And I want to do the Michael D, President Michael D. Higgins story, because we know that DUP leader Geoffrey Donaldson said today that there needs to be an honest explanation as to why the President Michael D. Higgins will not attend the church service to mark the centenary of the establishment of Northern Ireland, which will be attended by the Queen. We did ask the Oris this afternoon if he was unable to attend due to personal reasons or because of a prior commitment, but we haven't had a response back to that yet. Eoin, have you any insight into this?
I don't. And I know these questions sometimes come to Labour Party people first, but Michael Higgins isn't a member of the Labour Party and hasn't been for 10 years and was elected as an independent in the last presidential
election. You'd have been in there, though, wouldn't you?
No, I absolutely don't. I genuinely don't. I do know that Michael Higgins, I think, you know, he got broad support from every political party, I think, when he ran most recently, has been an incredible advocate for an inclusive Ireland over the course of his career. He's always spoken about a new republic. He has been that voice of unity. And I think if Geoffrey Donaldson is accusing him of not being honest, I think that's a...
He's not, to be fair. He's asking for an honest explanation. That's a long way away from accusing anybody of dishonesty.
I withdraw that. But if you're asking for an honest explanation, then you're kind of implying that the explanation before or heretofore hasn't been honest.
But there hasn't been any explanation. I think that is the problem here.
Right. Well, look, on balance, you know, do we want our president representing us at these big state occasions or these big, you know, cross-border occasions that are going to foster an understanding? Do we want to have a new Ireland that people of a unionist persuasion can feel comfortable in? Yeah, absolutely. Can the president play a role in that? Absolutely.
What about Pather Tobin's remark saying that there isn't a president in the world who would attend an event to mark, commemorate or celebrate the partition of his country?
The problem is what Pather Tobin has to understand, what A2 have to understand, and what Sinn Féin has to understand is that what they do makes a united Ireland even less likely.
But is this something that President Michael D. Higgins needs to understand?
Look, I'm not a spokesperson for Michael D. Higgins.
No, I'm just wondering, where are you saying he should be? In your view, I think you would like to see him going there.
If he went, I wouldn't be offended by him going. If he's not going, I'm assuming he has a very good explanation. If Geoffrey Donaldson isn't happy with that, but I would say this much: it's turned into a bit of a row, and having rows over sensitive issues like this is probably not a good space for us all to be in.
Okay, Nessa.
Oh, I agree with that last point, that conflating this into a bigger issue than it is, you know, if he chooses not to attend, he's perfectly within his rights. I think he has, you know, the president in the past has been a great supporter of Truth and Reconciliation and has attended events with the royal family before. And I think he has shown himself to be somebody who is really committed to understanding the unionist perspective. There could be 10 or 20 reasons why it's just not possible for him to attend. I'm willing to extend, you know, kind of leeway there that maybe he just can't attend. However, you know, it is a difficult function. I think for many Irish people, it would be a difficult function to attend and feel comfortable at. The celebration of partition.
Yeah, I mean, it's a church it's organised by church leaders. They're not organising it as a celebration. I think the line is reflection and hope are the words that are used to describe it. Verona, do you think he should go?
Well, it depends on why he's not going. And I think it is particularly uncharacteristic of Michael D to cause this type of controversy. As Eoin said, he has met with the Queen before. He enjoys the engagement. From what I've seen, I think he's a very fine statesman. I think he has represented us really well in both his tenures as president. I think it is unhelpful, though, that we should have speculation of this nature, given what's happened with Brexit, the Northern Ireland Protocol. I know it's a religious service, but I think we probably have to make as much effort, and sometimes we need to swallow a bit of pride. I don't know what the reason is, but I do think that unwanted speculation is unhelpful.
Okay, we'll take a break there, but we will be talking about that massive overspend on ventilators and protective equipment after these.
The Late Debate with Katie Hannan on RTE Radio 1.
And you're welcome back. And just a couple of texts from our earlier discussion. It's not just, this is the discussion about cronyism, it's not just important in Leinster House, it's important in every aspect of how our lives are run. Is the person in charge of the health service fit for the job, or the person in charge of town planning who decided whether a bus runs past this estate or that, or both? However, another texter says, honest to God, it's time to leave the Zappon Coveney issue behind and move on to something relevant. Well, I think the PAC couldn't be accused of irrelevancy today. They met at 9:30 this morning to hear about issues of procurement and spending over the last year in the HSE. Elaine, could you outline for us what Paul Reid was telling the committee this morning?
Yes, so we have 81 million that has yet to be recouped from ventilators and other machines that were bought. Now, Paul Reid said that this was at a time when we were in crisis. Essentially, we were looking to other nations. And if you remember back to March of the start of the pandemic, March 2020 now, it seems so long ago. And we were looking to Italy, where they had patients not even on beds, never mind an ICU, and didn't have enough ventilators. So there was this panic, you could say, within the HSE and across the globe to get the right resources in place for when this massive assault was expected on our health services. And he said that, you know, the procurement teams were working 24/7 and they took a risk-based approach. And in such a situation, we will get 70% of decisions right, 30% we would do differently again. And the facts, and I think members of PAC tried to get it out of Paul Reid and members of the HSE, just about the recoupment of that money. It's still ongoing. We heard that it was subject to legal wrangling now, and there was discussion around that. But we really didn't get an idea of when, if ever, we will get all the money back for some machines that we bought but didn't actually take delivery of.
Yeah, and some of the figures just flying around, like hundreds of millions. It's
extraordinary.
It's extraordinary. Can I, like, that explanation that Paul Reid put forward, that look, it was panic. It was, you know, they were doing their best under the most exceptional circumstances, and 30% of your decisions are going to be wrong. Is that acceptable?
I think the problem with it, and just to say, like, I do on some level accept the point, and it was a very fearful time, and there was a global buying panic for PPE and hand wash and ventilators, and I do accept that, you know, they were probably, you know, working flat out. However, the numbers are staggering. And even today, myself and Deputy Murphy, like, the listening to it, there was a lot that wasn't answered, because they were saying, well, you know, this is subject to legal challenge. We are still following up on that. And so I do think that we're going to end up having maybe more than one other session on this. The numbers are huge. It's still in a state of flux. You know, we're seeing ventilators. We're donating ventilators to other countries now that were never used here, and trying to recoup the cost. So I don't accept that we can simply write this off because of a pandemic. It's just too much money.
Yeah, I should say, of course, you were at that committee today, as were you, Verona. I know, I mean, there's a saying we often say upstairs, we're looking for stuff. We say it's better to be looking at it than looking for it, which I think was basically the driving force behind a lot of the procurement that
and
happened.
And that's essentially what we did. We bought it to look at it, because of the 465 ventilators that we did receive, they were never used. We have 100 still in storage. We have 365. I don't know, were they given to India or did they purchase them? We're going to get clarity on that. But there were 2,200 ventilators ordered and paid for, 81 million, 1,735 we never received. Now, I can understand that there was a panic, but these are procurement officers who've been doing procurement all of the time they've worked in the HSE. So the panic for me, or the red flag, should have been raised when we were purchasing ventilators for €15,000 that ordinarily cost €28,000. And if we were in a pandemic, how did they get cheaper if they were scarcer? It's just common sense. There didn't appear to even be any common sense. We are now out of pocket to the tune of, we're told today, what's outstanding is 35 million. There's expected to be 11 million of that come in next week. We're not clear about the balance of the 25 million. Now, it doesn't mean that we didn't yet get value for money on the balance, but it's expected. So I think realistically, Deputy McCarthy asked would a review be carried out of 2019, and that was a flat no. Now, I was surprised by that from the HSE, because I think if you need to learn, and we clearly...
Of 2019 or 2020?
No, of 2019, so that we could benchmark what exactly we were, right, you know, going against. But I think clearly these are professional people in what they do, and no matter, like, you couldn't, they seem to just do it. It was panic, entire panic. And yes, we were looking at Italy, but the reality was we never heard about the 465 ventilators that arrived, that were kept in storage, that were never used, that were of no use. Now, they said that the spec was different, but how come the spec isn't different in India and they can use them in India if we can't use them? To me, look, it is, as a new member of PAC, it is extraordinary.
Eoin, just in relation to ventilators, and I'll ask you on a general point first, but there was that extraordinary story in the Irish Examiner this morning about this company, EKO Integrated Services. This is a Clare building company, which became Ireland's largest supplier of COVID-19 PPE and agreed an order with the HSE for Chinese ventilators at a price 75% above the average cost for such machines.
Mm-hmm.
And it says that the EKO received its initial contracts with the HSE following the intervention of Alan Kelly, the Labour Party leader. Now, I'm not suggesting anything untoward happened here. This is a company, and there's no suggestion in the story that it was untoward in any way. But what in God's name was Alan Kelly doing intervening in the procurement process? He recommended the use of their services to both the HSE chief executive, Paul Reid, and the head of procurement, Sean Breslin.
Well, I think at that stage, everybody was offering opinions to everybody to try and rescue the situation. And if the HSE wanted to take on board, you know, recommendations given by politicians, then fair enough. I don't have a difficulty with it.
How would Alan Kelly have any idea of who might be a suitable
maybe he does and maybe he doesn't, but he wasn't the final decision maker, was he?
I'm not saying it was fine, but I mean, what expertise would you have to be intervening to introduce anybody to the head of procurement for the HSE
Take his view on board. I mean, I could give an opinion as to what should be used and what shouldn't be used.
Are you surprised by that, though?
I mean, I think we need to. I mean, I'm a bit surprised by some of the commentary here, to be honest, in general, about not remembering what March was like last year and April was like last year, when there was body bags in outside Italian hospitals and stories of, you know, elderly men giving their ventilators to younger men and then passing away, and priests giving them to 40-year-olds, 40-year-olds giving them to 30-year-olds. There was absolute chaos. And we were in a situation here in Ireland looking at these, you know, backed up lorries, piles of bodies, body counts. And we were told, or we had the feeling in Irish politics, that all of us had to come together, and you're going to make decisions in order to get the equipment. I remember vividly being told by any amount of workers in the health service that they didn't have appropriate PPE. Get the PPE in. Get PPE. It was all we ever talked about for the first number of months of the pandemic, was appropriate PPE. We can't get it. The stuff we got wasn't good enough. Get other stuff. Now, to be honest, if the HSE came into the PAC today and said, listen, to be honest, we balanced our books, so good job, everybody. But we have, the problem is that we had probably twice. Let me finish for a second, because it's fine to do the number crunching and say we spent too much. But I have to say I have sympathy. Whilst we have to absolutely interrogate the numbers and account for money that was spent, I have sympathy for decision makers at the heat of a potential catastrophic event in Irish history.
Both the members of the PAC here have said that, but they always
went out and told people
who had to throw money at something
And
Katie, government clearly told people at the time,
well,
don't panic buy food. We're not going to run out of food. We're not going to run out of food. Don't panic buy. I mean, I'm not saying...
And I'm just saying, by the way, just on the ventilators that weren't used, I think we're all lucky that they weren't used. But what happens if they had to be used?
The reality was...
So they couldn't be used.
I'm not a member of government, but I will defend the instincts of people to do the right thing for the right reason.
And I want to clarify one thing. There were no businesses mentioned at the PAC today. So that company or that incident didn't come up at PAC. We were actually very clearly told that we would be given information, but not over the public meeting. Mm-hmm. So I'm not sure if that is an incident or anything like that. But I can
again, and let me just be absolutely clear, there is no suggestion there was anything that company did.
No, and I'd be pretty sure that at the time, there were very helpful people who probably came to every politician with somebody in China that could source a mask that sent it. I have no difficulty with that.
But I have
a difficulty with anybody who is in a job. I mean, truck drivers didn't start going around breaking rules, driving at 100 miles an hour to deliver food. The truth is, Aidan, these people had a job to do. And it was done completely disregarded any form of procurement, any form. It was asked for forgiveness, not permission. Now, sometimes that's how you get things done.
Well,
I understand. And caveat this morning was that I understood that. But the reality here is it is 81 million. And it's a nonchalant attitude now that everybody is supposed to just accept that.
If there was a tax cut that cost 81 million, the budget coming up, nobody would blink an eye. And what they were trying to do in the heat of the battle was to do the right thing. Now, I am not somebody who's going to stand over, you know, mismanagement of funds or poor procurement practices. I'm not. But at the same time, I will stand over the instinct of those in positions of authority who did what they did for the right reasons, which was to save lives. And I think at this remove, when we're all talking about opening up and everything is fine and dandy, we don't remember the white fear, the white-knuckled fear that people had.
But how come those resources weren't put into ICU if the same fear was applying? Because they completely were ventilators that were put into storage that couldn't be used, and they knew that.
Well, isn't it just as well they weren't used? What happens if they did have to be used? If we were in the situation that Italy was in, we were predicting, and people were predicting potentially.
But I think, Aidan, the point is that even if they did have to be, we were in real trouble because they were not compatible with our systems here. So they were never going to be any good to us.
My overall point is this. Look, my overall point is I think I've aired my overmore point.
Yeah.
But my overmore point.
Yes, you know what, I think you have.
You have, okay.
Let me just ask Elaine. Elaine, what's the feeling about this around? Is there a sense that there's an general understanding, as Aon was saying there, that, you know, this was panic times and, you know, people did their best under the circumstances? Or is this seen as perhaps a growing scandal?
I think to a level the understanding has to be there. And, you know, we're still not out of this crisis. It's still a bit raw for everyone, but at the same time I think the focus may come on the HSE and the checks and balances in the procurement process. I think, you know, even the companies that were used to acquire some of these machines, you kind of think if you're going to build a 10-storey skyscraper and the local builder who's only ever built extensions onto houses tenders, there's no way he would get the contract in the same respect as some of these companies who had never been in the business before tendered and seem to have got the contract. So I think more questions will be raised around that in the weeks and months ahead.
Okay, we'll move on quickly. I see the time going against us, but I want to get to this because today's Social Democrats co-leader Catherine Murphy called on the Housing Minister to come before the Dáil to correct comments he made on the shared equity scheme. This is a central part of his Housing for All strategy. So we go back, June 24th, this is what Dara O'Brien, Housing Minister Dara O'Brien, said about the controversial scheme in relation to approval by the Central Bank.
And in the affordable housing bill that I'm bringing forward and that will come to the House here this evening, which I hope the Social Democrats will support, as part of that is a shared equity scheme that is calibrated and focused on those who need it most. It will work. It has been passed by the CBI. It has received approval. And it will actually help those who are caught in an affordability trap.
Okay, so clear as day there. It's been passed by the central bank. It has received approval. He said pretty much the same thing on prime time on September 2nd when he was launching that Housing for All strategy. Again, saying the plan had been approved by the central bank. But the central bank told Primetime this week that the scheme was and still is under consideration. So the minister was back at the Dáil yesterday, and this is what he said.
I'm made aware of comments made during today's order of business, and I would very quickly like to clarify that the remarks I've made in reference to the First Home Shared Equity Scheme relate to the aspect of the scheme whereby, informed by engagement with the CBI, the scheme is being designed as an equity product rather than is being a debt on the purchaser, which is very important. I've continually said that. I've consistently made that point in response to opposition claims that the shared equity scheme is a debt-based. It's not. It's an equity scheme. To conclude, through PQs and during recent speeches on the affordable housing scheme as recently as June, I've repeatedly stated that the operational details of the First Home Shared Equity Scheme are currently being finalised. And I quote, work on the detailed design of the proposed scheme is ongoing and at an advanced stage, which as recently as June in an oral parliamentary question response. So just I wanted to clarify that, take the opportunity, and thank you for your indulgence.
Do you think that clarified anything, Nessa?
No, I have to say I was waiting for the bit of clarity there. I believe the Minister O'Brien has now written to the Ceann Comhairle to give further information. I believe that's the case. Look, I think the call to come in to the Dáil is a bit more theatre, and that's fine if people want to do that. I'm not sure it'll actually add to the debate in any way. I'm not a fan of that scheme, to be perfectly honest with you. I'd prefer to see the funding go towards cost rental. But I'm not sure, you know, the actual mechanism of the minister coming in and taking that off the record will in any way progress the issue. He's absolutely committed to that scheme and is fairly committed to it going forward.
But it has to get central bank approval before it can go forward, isn't that
it?
It
absolutely does. But whether or not he goes into the Dáil and you know, does what the Social Democrats want will have no bearing on that.
I know, yeah, but I mean, Eoin.
Well, he wasn't clearly as sure-footed in his second remarks as he was in the first one. And, you know, when housing ministers come forward and say this is our plan, it's been passed by the Central Bank of Ireland, that gives a kind of credibility to what he's saying, and then turns out that he isn't. I think we would welcome him coming into the House, not just to speak as to whether the Central Bank, you know, gave it the go-ahead or not, but how it's going to work. Because we've seen in London that it hasn't worked, and about 60% of those who availed the scheme would have been able to buy without availing of the scheme. So It's the substance of the scheme that's important to us and how it's actually going to work.
Yeah, and this is Leo Varadkar.
As Nyasa said, you know, the theatre around, or clarifying.
Isn't remarks. The problem, whatever about the, if you want to call it theatre or whatever, but I mean, isn't the issue here is that we know from the first we heard of this scheme that the list of institutions and people and individuals in key places that have come out and said this scheme is a bad idea.
Exactly. And that's where you get the nub of. And that's why we do need him to come into the House and answer questions on that, on the substance of his plan.
This is what I'm told Leo Varadkar said on the shared equity scheme today. I know some people say it will lead to inflating house prices, but what's the alternative to that? Leaving them renting, which will inflate rent prices. Verona?
Well, I said it earlier, and the more I hear and the more I see, it's like, yes, Minister, coming to fruition in real life. But look, I'm of the opinion that I think we should allow the central bank to finish their analysis, but they need to do that very quickly. I do think also that, you know, the minister has, there needs to be clarification. The reality is that we do need to interrogate those issues. People do need to hear the clarity on it. But I think, again, initially it was spin. Initially it was spin. And like this government, I believe, will spin itself out of existence at some point. But I think we should get clarity.
OK. And just before we move on again, I've just got a message in from Labour.
At the start of the pandemic in March, Alan Kelly, like many others, was asked by the HSE about any contacts he had that may be able to help source PPE and other healthcare equipment when there were huge concerns and public worry about getting enough vital medical supplies into Ireland to protect our doctors, nurses and frontline healthcare workers. Alan asked a whole range of people if they could help. EKO was one of those asked, as they have been involved in a number of projects in his constituency and they had extensive links with China. Thankfully, they were able to use their network to help procure PPE for the HSE at a time of global shortages. This has been widely reported on locally and nationally, and we are happy to clarify that.
Now, isn't that great to get an issue clarified as quick as that?
Listen, we are here to serve. Finally, we've just a few minutes left, but I do want to touch on this because, I mean, many people will have heard Michael O'Leary this morning putting it up to Eamon Ryan and putting it up to the government, I think it's fair to say, and basically saying, where is our aviation recovery plan? And citing all the other countries that have put together plans to get their aviation industry back up and running, and saying our minister has failed.
Is that a question to me?
It is, because he is your party leader.
Well, look, I think it's particularly rich, I have to say, for Michael O'Leary to be asking for any kind of a recovery plan. Certainly, when they're in great profit, they're no great friend to the state, I wouldn't say. So, I'm not interested in his calls for a recovery plan. I do think that there's an issue around like how we go forward in terms of the aviation industry, more than the shipping industry, because we are going to have to reimagine that industry as we move forward in terms of climate action.
But isn't this is like the undercurrent of everything that Michael O'Leary says in relation to the Minister for Transport, Eamon Ryan? There is this sense that he's conflicted on this, that he's being asked to reinflate an industry that he has obviously fundamental issues with in relation to the climate issues.
I think that's a good word, reinflate the industry. I saw a tweet from Philip Boucher-Hayes today where he was looking to go to the environmental conference in Glasgow, the COP conference in a month, and he was getting the ferry and the train because of the emissions, and it was going to cost him £122 or €122, and to fly would have been €8.99. Now, that's not a sustainable industry. That's not a good industry, not when it's costing us literally the earth. So I do think we need to reimagine the aviation industry, and that's going to take some hard work.
Well, if reimagine it means that we close Cork Airport for 18 months and as soon as we open the country up again, they start 18 months later when it could have been done to build the extended runway. I mean, where is the joined up thinking? How can we keep an airport out of existence when all of that work could have been done during the lockdown? For me, it's about joined up thinking. Of course, we have to look at climate and carbon, but the reality is that has to be proportionate. We can't just shut down an industry. We can't just let it go. We are an island nation, and I appreciate that Nessa says we have to reimagine our shipping industry. Yes, at the moment, we have no alternatives. That's a problem. That's a huge problem. I said to you at the Kennedy Summer School about building one-off houses in rural Ireland. You said that wasn't sustainable because of the cost of services. One-off houses in rural Ireland and those building them pay for those services. They pay for water, they pay for electricity, they pay for internet. So it's not as simple as saying it's not sustainable. It must be proportionate. It has
to
be proportionate.
We could talk about the amount the state is paying on broadband. We could go through all of the different infrastructure for one-off housing. That's a completely different topic, but
no,
we could certainly
it is,
go
it
there.
It is the attitude
and we
that
could go
you actually
the we could go
you
through
alluded
the numbers
to
prove
the
that
fact
absolutely
that
the cost
Minister
of the state
Ryan
is
one word, one voice, one voice.
No, Katie, you alluded to the fact that Minister Ryan has a conflict, and I think that is very damaging at the moment if that conflict inhibits opening up the country.
Eoin, very quickly in our last minute, we need an aviation recovery plan?
I think we need a recovery plan for the jobs. I think we need to talk with those in those industries who are worried about losing their jobs. But I think Michael O'Leary, I have very little respect for a lot of his utterances. The last time I was in the studio, he came on.
He's a big employer. Yeah, he brings a lot of tourists into this country.
But he's not entitled to use...
No, you can't dismiss that.
He's not entitled to come on the air and use phraseology like scariant, which he did previously about the variant that we're all grappling with. So if he wants to get a dig out from the state, that's, you know, I'm sure he has ears that listen to him. But I want to know about what's going to happen to the workers and those jobs that are at risk. I feel like I care more about those than necessarily Michael O'Leary does.
It's Nessa, last word to you.
Look, I can't reiterate how little I'm interested in what Michael O'Leary has to say. But I would agree with Aon that, you know, it's the jobs, it's that idea of a just transition, because we won't be going forward in the next decade the way we have in the last.
Well, I'd ask the Greens to concentrate on an extension that's going to cost $320 million to Dublin Port. That shouldn't be happening. And that's not coming from Michael O'Leary.
OK. And on that note, I'm looking at the front page of tomorrow's Irish Examiner with a headline, World Far Off Course to Tackle Climate Change. That's your scare at bedtime for tonight. And the other scare at bedtime is Murdoch. Apparently, Rupert Murdoch is to launch a rival to GB News in the UK. So that's it for tonight and indeed for this week. The producer tonight was Penny Hart. Research was by Andrew Fleming. The BCO was Elaine Conlon and Kieran Dunn was on sound. Cathal Murray is up next. I should say thank you to my panel for coming in, and thank you all for listening. Cathal Murray up next with Late Day, but now it's over to Gary Moore on the sports desk.